Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, from London, England, and this is the real thing now. Last week was the rehearsal when I welcomed WNYC AM New York to the ever-growing Le Show Network, because I was misinformed that they were joining last week, but they joined this week, I think. If not, somebody will let me know. But in any case, this is the real welcome to WNYC AM. Sounds so good in AM, don't you think? In the digital age especially. And welcome to all the listeners in New York. We've missed you. Yes, we have. I'm in London, of course, but as I said, I'll be returning soon to Los Angeles to campaign for my aspirational Oscar. Ladies and gentlemen, MTV has greenlit Gone Too Far. This is Annals of Reality for your listening pleasure. Gone Too Far was greenlit after its host, Adam Goldstein, was found dead with cocaine, OxyContin, and other drugs in his bloodstream. Among the other drugs, levamisole, a drug that is used to cut cocaine, so I've been told. Also, Ativan, Klonopin, Xanax, and Benadryl. It's going around, that cocktail. In July, MTV development chief Tony DeSanto told TV reporters covering TV that the show was part of the network's new, quote, aspirational and optimistic brand filter. That aspirational thing is going around, too. The show's executive producer at that time, Michael Hirshhorn, said in every case of the addicts who were dramatized, well, actually were documented on the show, the show got the addicts to seek help, except, of course, as it turns out, the host, Adam Goldstein. Back in July, another of the show's executive producers, Paul Rosenberg, told TV critics, quote, when you meet Goldstein as a person, the thing that really strikes you, and that he really drives home quickly and to a point almost where you're off put about it, is his sobriety, unquote. This is your brain on the war on drugs. Stiff competition from thousands of mom-and-pop marijuana farmers in the United States threatens the bottom line for powerful Mexican drug organizations in a way that decades of arrests and seizures have not. That's what law enforcement officials and pot growers tell the Washington Post. Recent changes in state laws that allow the use and cultivation of marijuana for medical purposes are giving U.S. growers a competitive advantage, challenging the traditional dominance of the Mexican traffickers, who once made brands such as Acapulco Gold the standard for quality. So it says here, almost all the marijuana consumed in the U.S. market once came from Mexico or Colombia. Now as much as half is produced domestically, often by small-scale operators who painstakingly tend greenhouses and indoor gardens to produce the more potent and expensive product that consumers now demand, according to authorities. I don't know how they know. Oh, they test it. You know that. The shifting economics of the marijuana trade, says the Post, have broad implications for Mexico's war against the drug cartels, suggesting that market forces, as much as law enforcement, can extract a heavy price from criminal organizations that have used the spectacular profits of pot sales to fuel violence and corruption. Market forces, rather than a war on drugs, ladies and gentlemen. Where was Bear Stearns and Goldman Sachs in all this? And finally, just to start things off, the story this week of a bomb hidden inside an Al-Qaeda assassin's body arriving on his target's personal plane. His target was a Saudi prince who was well known for his accommodationist approach to terrorists. But that's not the point of the story. Point of the story, the assailant Abdullah Hassan Tali Asiri, well, the buried lead of the story, really, way down at the bottom, number 40 on a list of 85 terrorists that the Saudi government considers most dangerous. He's a Saudi, or he was before he blew himself up with a bomb secreted in a nether region. He was a Saudi, but he was based in Yemen, where Al-Qaeda has been gaining strength. So not only Somalia, ladies and gentlemen, but Yemen. And us? Hey, we're in Afghanistan. What's wrong with that? Hello, welcome to the show.
Could have been a sailor, could have been a cook. A real life lover, could have been a book. I could have been a signpost, could have been a clock. As simple as a kettle, steady as a rock. I could be here and now. I would be, I should be, but how? I could have been, but what are these things first? I could have been. Could have been your pillow, could have been your dog. I could have stayed beside you, could have stayed for more. I could have been your statue, could have been your friend. A whole long lifetime could have been. Could be oh so true. I would be, I should be through and through. I could have been, but what are these things first? I could have been.
from London, England, from way, way across the pond. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And speaking of London, ladies and gentlemen, in case it escapes the Nobel Prize Peace Prize Committee, just exactly how much clout the United States still has, even now, even before Barack Obama was anointed with the prize. Just this: David Letterman is not seen on television in Britain. Even so, news of his sex scandal is covered on British television news. See, that's what I'm talking about. We stand tall. And speaking of which, now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Dave, you're on.
I would just like to set the record straight. No, I'm not having sex with these women. Those episodes are in the past. So my apologies to subjecting them to that vulnerability and being browbeaten and humiliated, it never occurred to me. I'm terribly sorry that I put the staff in that position inadvertently. I just wasn't thinking ahead. Now, the other thing is my wife, Regina, she has been horribly hurt by my behavior. And when something happens like that, if you hurt a person, and it's your responsibility, you try to fix it. And at that point, there's only two things that can happen. Either you're going to make some progress and get it fixed, or you're going to fall short and perhaps not get it fixed. So let me tell you, folks, I got my work cut out for me. And now, also, because what can it hurt? Once again, I'd like to apologize to the former governor of Alaska.
But wait, there's more. The billionaire co-founder of Black Entertainment Television apologized this week for pretending to stutter at a campaign event as she mimicked the Democratic candidate for governor of Virginia. BET co-founder Sheila Johnson, for years a major donor, not a domo, donor to President Obama, Governor Timothy Kaine, and other Democrats, stunned Virginia political observers in July by endorsing Republican Bob McDonnell in the governor's race. They're easily stunned, apparently. He's running against Democrat Cray Deeds. In a YouTube video posted by a Democratic blogger, Johnson told a small crowd that Virginia needs a government who can really communicate, and Bob McDonnell can communicate. The other people I talked to, especially his opponent, did this all through my interview with him, she said to muted laughter. Then she added he could not articulate what needed to be done. In a statement emailed to the AP, Johnson said she was seeking to highlight Deed's inability to clearly communicate effective solutions. I shouldn't have done it in the manner in which I did, and for that I apologize for any offense he or others may have taken. U.S. Catholic bishops have tried to reassure Jewish leaders that interfaith dialogue will never be used as a means of proselytizing or a disguised invitation to baptism. After months of interfaith tension, the overture from the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops came more than 3 months after the Jewish leaders were angered by bishops seeming to imply that Jews would be targets of evangelism and conversion. In two letters sent and released in the past week, the bishop said an attempt to clear up an insufficiently precise and potentially misleading statement had actually created more problems. "We remain deeply committed to dialogue and friendship with the Jewish people," said Cardinal Francis George of Chicago. His letter was signed by the chairman of his Interfaith Relations and Doctrine Committee, said the gift of faith in Christ is one that can never be coerced. This is the latest wrinkle in several months of back-and-forth exchanges that left both sides uncomfortable, an uncommon about-face for the bishops, who rarely, if ever, backtrack on previous statements. The bishops said they deleted two troublesome sentences from a statement they issued in June. And George also issued a six-point statement of principles on Jewish-Catholic dialogue that apologized for the misunderstandings and feelings of hurt. "Because we are dialogue partners," the statement said, "this hurt is ours as well." Another apology from over here, I think, on this side of the pond. With her grotesquely thin waist and hips, she displays a figure few women would aspire to, Yet, this dramatically distorted image of a healthy model was chosen by Ralph Lauren to advertise his expensive clothes. Philippa Hamilton's size 8 frame underwent such a transformation in its poster for Blue Label jeans that her head actually seems wider than her waist. Ralph Lauren quickly apologized for the botched photograph. After investigation, said the statement, we have learned that we're responsible for the poor imaging and retouching that resulted in a very distorted image of a woman's body. We've addressed the problem, and going forward, we'll take every precaution to ensure that the caliber of our artwork represents our brand appropriately. The skeletal picture of the 23-year-old French model who says she's a size 8 was first highlighted on a website called Photoshop Disasters. You know what that website specializes in. Ralph Lauren initially responded by accusing the websites of copyright infringement. So the apology was a second response. Dateline Flagstaff, Arizona, U.S. Forest Service officials apologized to residents of a northern Arizona town for letting a controlled burn escape containment lines last week and threaten the city known as the Gateway to the Grand Canyon. Kaibab National Forest officials told residents of Williams, Arizona, at a meeting that they will bring in outside investigators to review the incident. We sincerely apologize for what happened and for the stress and inconvenience it caused the community, said District Ranger Marty Schramm. We take full responsibility. Schramm also pledged the agency would reevaluate its burning policies after the planned 900-acre fire was lit about 3 miles southwest of the town of 3,000 residents. A wind shift sent the flames across containment lines and back across the town, burning an additional 900 acres and prompting the evacuation of more than 60 homes. In an emotional vote, the City Council of Charlottesville, Virginia, apologized for the role its predecessors played in keeping the city's schools racially segregated in the 1950s, despite a U.S. Supreme Court decision rendering segregation illegal. Councilors unanimously approved the resolution, which outlined a history of the city's role during massive resistance, the failed attempt in Virginia to keep public schools segregated. Charlottesville closed its all-white schools rather than integrate them. The schools were shut down for 5 months, and the division stayed segregated for the rest of the academic year. An Illinois federal judge has apologized for allowing TV cameras in his courtroom last month after the chief judge of the federal courts in three Midwestern states opened an inquiry into possible judicial misconduct. Federal court rules have long banned audio and video broadcasts in U.S. district courts. Blame OJ. And finally, in the apologies of the week, from a legendary Australian television variety show. A friend of mine and I happened to be guests on it about 18 or 19 years ago on our first visit to Australia, plugging some Spinal Tap something. And it was just an appalling, amazingly appalling show. It had been on the air at that point for about 20, 25 years. It was always a ratings winner on a Saturday night in Australia. And it was... It had started as a children's show, and it had somehow morphed into this huge Saturday night primetime success called Hey, Hey, It's Saturday. There were puppets. There were caricaturists. It was a farrago. Anyway, they had a reunion show. It's been off the air for a long time now. But they had a reunion show this week, and Harry Connick Jr. was the guest judge in a gong show segment of Hey, Hey, It's Saturday. And in this segment, four guys of various races, by the way, black-faced and put on black Afro wigs and appeared as the Jackson Jive, and a guy in whiteface fronted the group. And Harry Connick Jr. was not amused.
I know that, your countrymen, that's an insult to you know, have a blackface routine
right,
like that on
right.
the show. So I do apologize to you.
Thanks, Daryl.
Daryl Summers, host of Hey, Hey, It's Saturday, starting the parade of apologies. Next came the leader of the group.
Look, clearly, all of us want to apologize. I mean, we've offended some people, no doubt, and most particularly Mr. Connick Jr. And so I want to say on behalf of all of us that this was really not intended as anything to do with racism at all. We did this skit, as you said, 20 years ago as medical students. We performed it over the years, and in fact, recently we were invited back to the Sydney University Medical Review to relive the old days, and it's always been well received. So, you know, firstly, I want to say that if we've offended anyone, we'd really like to sincerely apologise. This was certainly not our aim. In fact, it's quite ironic that I'm an Indian, and five of the six of us are from multicultural backgrounds.
I know.
To be called a racist, in fact, I don't think I've ever been called that ever in my life before.
Isn't that extraordinary?
This is the first, certainly for me.
The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. The musical portions of today's program basically center on the work of a wonderful gentleman, a great musician who passed away this past week, Robert Kirby. I had the opportunity to meet him and have some conversation with him, and I know people who've worked with him over the years. And today, the longer musical pieces you're going to hear are some work that he did with the legendary Nick Drake. But somebody else passed away in the last few days. I became aware of his passing, and he had a bizarrely profound effect on me. In 1979, I was in New York City. Hello, New York. Sounds so good in AM. And I was working on a television program that was not an unalloyed pleasure. And my ticket out of Hades every late Saturday night, early Sunday morning, was to retreat to my office and turn on what was even then an antiquated boombox and dial it over to the top of the FM dial to this weird little station in New Jersey where a guy from the Bronx had apparently purchased a couple of hours of airtime each week to play this new music that was coming out of the Bronx that, at least at that time, in that mood, my friend Paul Schaefer and I found kind of captivating. The man's name was Mr. Magic. The show was Mr. Magic's Rap Attack. And it was not a rap attack that felled him last week at the age of 53. But this is what he played.
Set a hip. The hippie to the hippie to hip hip a hopper, you don't stop rocking to the bang bang. The boogie say up, jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to bead. Well, skittle bee bop, we rock a Scooby Doo. And guess what, America, we love you. Well, cause you're rocking and rolling with us so much so. You can rock till you're 101 years old. I don't mean to brag, I don't mean to boast, but we're like hot butter on a breakfast toast. Rock it out, a baby bubba to the boogie to bang bang. The boogie to the beat, beat is so unique. Come on, everybody, and dance to the beat. Went over a friend's house to eat, and the food just ain't no good. I mean, the macaroni soggy, the peas all mushed, and the chicken tastes like wood. So you try to play it off like you think you can by saying that you're full. And then your friend says, Mama, he's just being polite. He ain't finishing. Oh, that's bull. So your heart starts pumping, and you think of a lie, and you say that you already ate. And your friend says, man, there's plenty of food, so he piles some more on your plate. But while the stinky food's steaming, your mind starts to dream another moment. It's time to leave. And then you look at your plate and your chicken's still rotting into something that looks like cheese. Well, so you say, that's it, I got to leave this place. I don't care what these people think. I'm just sitting here making myself nauseous with this ugly food that stinks. Well, so you bust out the door while it's still closed, still sick from the food you ate. And then you run to the store for quick relief from a bottle of KO Pectate. And then you call your friend 2 weeks later to see how he has been. And he says, I understand about the food, babe, but we're still friends. But with a hip hop, the hippie to the hippie, the hip hip, a hobby, you don't stop the rocker to the bang bang. We can say, up jump the boogie to the rhythm of the boogie to the beat.
City freeze, get on your knees, pray for warmth and green paper. A city drought, you're down and out, I see your trousers don't taper. Saddle up, kick your feet, ride the range of a London street. I travel to a local plane. Turn around and come back again. And at the chime of a city clock, put up your roadblock, hang on to your crown. For a stone in a tin can is worth to the city man who leaves his armor down. Stained doors beneath the floors, talk with neighbors only. For games you play make people say you're ever weird and lonely. A city star won't shine too far on account of the way you are and the beat around your face, make you sure to fit back in place. And at the beat of a city drum, see how your friends come in twos or threes or more. For the sound of a busy place is fine for a pretty face. Who knows what a face is for? City clown will soon fall down without a face to hide in, and he will lose if he won't choose the one he may confide in. A sunny boy with smokes for sale went to ground with a face so pale. I never heard about the change, showed his hand and fell out of range. In the light of a city square, I find out the face that's fair, keep it by your side. When the light of the city falls, you fly to the city walls, I take off with your bride. But at the chime of a city clock, put up your roadblock, hang on to your crown. For a stone in a tin can is worth to the city man who leaves his armor down.
From CPR, Continental Public Radio, this is All in All. All in All, CPR's weekly attempt to bring what's behind the news in front of the news and leave it right there. I'm Milton Getzler in Washington. The last Republican holdouts have conceded, and so now all 50 governors have decided to accept at least some federal stimulus money. A bit of that money will go to education, keeping some teachers from being laid off and helping to put bars on more classroom windows. Still, school systems around the country are feeling the pinch and pinching the feel of the downward economic spiral. One school system has decided to do something about it, and they're betting it may catch on across the country. Leanne Sylvia Schlossberg-Godoy reports from Mopar County, Michigan.
It's 3 o'clock at John F. Kennedy Middle School, in the heart of this once leafy suburb. As the more than 1,000 kids who call this school J-Ken get into their cars and head home, a different sort of bell begins to ring. The high-pitched song of 350 slot machines. That sound will continue ringing through the school's memorial building until 8 the following morning, because, facing rising costs and shrinking tax revenues, Mopar County's schools have taken advantage of a waiver from the state and opened the first casino in America based in a school.
We asked ourselves, school real estate is terribly underutilized during the prime evening and late night hours. How can we monetize the more effective use of these properties?
Todd Galen is Deputy Superintendent for Development at Mopar County Schools.
The obvious candidate was some kind of entertainment use. We looked at perhaps multiplexing the auditorium for cinema use, but in the end, the offer from the Onaga tribe just turned out to be a lot more win-win, especially for us.
Gentillo Big Feather is with the Onaga tribe.
Mr. Galen came to us with a proposal to retrofit his cafeteria property for casino usage on a shared day basis. Now, normally we'd like to have total control over our properties and anyone inside them, but in this case, we decided it was time to give something back. They were offering what for us are the most lucrative hours of the day. We figured if there was any way to bring casino-like ambience to a school building temporarily each evening and then remove that ambience every morning, hey, we'd go for it.
No casino had had such a portable sense of atmosphere since the speakeasies of the 1930s, and no one in today's super-sophisticated gaming industry has roots in that era. So Superintendent Galen went all the way to Hollywood to find someone who did. Movie production designer Don Mercury.
I had done the design for The Night They Raided Capone's, which was the very first original movie for the History Channel. And we had had this quite spectacular casino, which converted back into a very bland office set when the gang got word the police were nearby. So we came into J-Ken, saw where some movable walls could go into the space, so the walls with 180 between the teacher's lounge, bulletin boards, and travel posters, and a black-walled, neon-lit slots pavilion. And we knew we could bring it in for even less than the History Channel had for their budget.
The tribe assumed the construction costs that gets reimbursed off the top, and already after just 17 days, we're seeing a very nice revenue stream. We've already bought a new used towel hamper for the cafeteria, and if early projections by the tribe hold firm, we'll be able to cut class size by 2 kids starting in the fall.
I asked Superintendent Galen whether some citizens didn't object to a gambling casino plopped right in the middle of a public school.
Well, there were some raised eyebrows, there were some ruffled feathers, there were a few noses put out of joint. There was also a big public outcry. But this community has been hit pretty hard in the last 35 years or so, and once Mr. Big Feather showed his PowerPoint about how the casino business is the only one that's maintained solid revenue during the recession, our folks got it that this was a choice between a casino and the school and no school. It was a no-brainer, literally.
Obviously, we want to make this work, so we're on our best behavior. Dr. Galen, I guess it's Mr. Galen, thought the Star Wars-themed slots wasn't a good idea. Boom, they're gone. We don't want anyone to think we're using our privileged location to proselytize kids to start gambling. As a matter of fact, we're funding a Go Wild Responsibly unit for the district to use in whatever classes they see purpose fit for it.
If you didn't know the School Days Casino, spelled, of course, D-A-Z-E, was located at John Kennedy Middle School, you couldn't really tell unless you noticed the one-way see-through floor installed in the faculty ladies' room, located directly above the casino for security purposes. Superintendent Galen is already fielding inquiries from school districts across the nation, and the odds are good that soon, at a school near you, when you're offered chips, they won't be potato chips. I'm Leanne Sylvia Schlossberg-Godoy in Mopar County, Michigan.
And for this week, that's all for All in All. We had help this week from the Bankruptcy Foundation, turning it up to Chapter 11. Next week, we get to the bottom of another top story on All in All. I'm Milton Getzler, reminding you, you can't have it all, but you can have All in All. This is CPR, Continental Public Radio.
This is Le Show, and now, ladies and gentlemen, News of the Warm. The award-winning News of the Warm, won't you?
Soft, listen to the warm.
With the world's oceans absorbing 6 million tons of carbon a day, a leading oceanographer warns of disaster. Carbon dioxide emissions are turning the waters of the Arctic Ocean into acid at an unprecedented rate, scientists have discovered. Research carried out in the archipelago of Svalbard has shown in many regions around the North Pole, seawater is likely to reach corrosive levels within 10 years. The water will then start to dissolve the shells of mussels and other shellfish and cause major disruption to the food chain. By the end of the century, the entire Arctic Ocean will be corrosively acidic. This is extremely worrying, says Professor Jean-Pierre Gattuso of France's National Research Scientific Research Center. We knew that the seas were getting more acidic and this would disrupt the ability of shellfish to grow their shells, but now we realize the situation is much worse. The water will become so acidic, it will actually dissolve the shells of living shellfish. See, and you feel bad. At least you're not a mussel. Despite a slight recovery in summer Arctic sea ice in 2009 from record-setting low years the last 2 years, the sea ice extent remains significantly below previous years and remains on a trend leading toward ice-free Arctic summers. That's from the University of Colorado at Boulder's National Snow and Ice Data Center. Good place for it. According to the center, the 2009 minimum sea ice extent was the third lowest since satellite record-keeping began in 1979. The last 5 years have seen the five lowest Arctic sea ice events ever recorded. It's nice to see a little recovery over the past couple of years, but there's no reason to think that we're headed back to conditions seen in the 1970s, said the Institute's director, Mark Cerezi. We still expect to see ice-free summers sometime in the next few decades. Converting the trash that fills the world's landfills into biofuel may be the answer to both the growing energy crisis and to tackling carbon emissions. This is the claim of scientists in Singapore and Switzerland. Switzerland. New research published in Global Change Biology Bioenergy reveals... Yeah, my subscription lapsed. I'm copying somebody else's copy. This new research reveals how replacing gasoline with biofuel from processed waste could cut global carbon emissions by 80%. Biofuels produced from crops are controversial because they require an increase in crop production, which helps build the dead zones, which are growing in bodies of water around the world. But second-generation biofuels, such as cellulosic ethanol, derived from processed urban waste, may offer dramatic emission savings without the environmental catch. Our results suggest that food from processed waste biomass such as paper and cardboard is a promising clean energy solution, says study author Associate Professor Hugh Tan of Singapore's National University. If developed fully, this biofuel could simultaneously meet part of the world's energy needs while also combating carbon emissions and fossil fuel dependency. So, the more waste you generate, the more fuel you've got. Throw away some crap today, won't you? News of the Warm, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now to AFPAC. The administration, as you know, is in the middle of a long, or somewhat long, criticized for being long, review of its Afghanistan-Pakistan policy, which it announced in March was going to be an AFPAC policy. So this is the second review this year. And according to Friday's Washington Post, the administration has concluded the Taliban cannot be eliminated as a political or military movement, regardless of how many troops are sent into battle. The goal, senior administration officials told the Post this week, is to weaken the Taliban to the degree that it cannot challenge the Afghan government. The government's so weak that you've got to weaken the Taliban pretty much to do that. Or reestablish the haven it provided for al-Qaeda before the 2001 invasion. The Taliban is a deeply rooted political movement in Afghanistan, so that requires a different approach than al-Qaeda does, says a senior administration official who's participated in the meetings. Some inside the White House cite Hezbollah as an example of what the Taliban could become. Talk about aspirational. And in those deliberations, first of all, according to, I believe, the Washington Post reporting, there have been only 6 hours of those deliberations so far, of those meetings. I don't want to lay on that too heavily, but there you go. And Friday, as he did at four previous meetings this month, General Stanley McChrystal, the head of U.S. forces over there, appeared at the closed-door session discussing the policy via video connection from Kabul. Presenting Obama and his top advisors McChrystal's full assessment of the situation. He initially planned to arrive in Washington in person to attend the meeting, but he was told it would be best if he stayed in Afghanistan for the time being. But General James Jones, head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, supervised a rehearsal of McChrystal's presentation at the White House on Thursday. Yeah, they even rehearsed that. Which, you know, made me think, maybe they're going the whole wrong way in trying to come up with a new AFPAC policy. Maybe there's a better way.
Tonight, our final two contestants face off in the competition to determine who will present a new Afghanistan policy at this fall's Senate Foreign Relations Committee show. Only one policy designer can win. Anything less is defeat, and that is not an option. Welcome to Project Afghanway.
Hello, designers.
Hello, Tim.
Hello, Tim.
That's Deputy Assistant Undersecretary Tim to you. Designers, tonight's challenge is the supreme test of your ability to craft a policy that's elegant in design and to present it in a way that makes it accessible to the mass marketplace. God knows if I could do that, I wouldn't be selling detergent on TV. Your job, designers, is to select a television talk show to appear on and to craft a 45-second appearance explaining your Afghanistan policy in a way that's appropriate for that show. Now, I'll be dropping in to help and annoy you all along the way. You have 18 hours and the run of our wardrobe department to construct your look. Good luck!
Ethan, 33, Harvard Doctorate in International Relations, minor in Media Studies.
I always knew I should watch more TV. Now it's too late. I don't even know these shows. I'm gonna have to do some fast work on the net.
What? Hello? No way! The internet can't be down! Not now!
Clarissa, 27. Youngest assistant professor in Johns Hopkins history. Ghostwrites articles for Joe Biden.
I'm going to prepare a presentation for Bill O'Reilly. That's the ultimate challenge for any foreign policy that's not all-out armed conflict. Also, the set's mainly blue. That makes it easy, I think.
14 hours, designers. How are we doing?
I'm thinking Meet the Press, where a nuanced military buildup paired with an unannounced pullback to selected bases might be appreciated by that sophisticated inside the Beltway audience.
You sure we want to go inside Beltway? I'm just asking. I'm perplexed.
Well, as I understand the challenge, it's matching policy and platform. Or have I just not been getting enough sleep?
Not even Harvey Weinstein is getting enough sleep. Just a word of advice for Meet the Press. You might want a slightly more relaxed shoulder treatment.
Thanks, Tim.
Make it work. Hi, Cloetha.
Hi, Tim.
What do we got?
Well, I narrowed down my policy outline from last week.
Good. You were a little bit big picture for the room, you know? No more Uzbekistan or Tajikistan?
No, strictly AFPAC.
See, I think that works. How's your look coming?
Well, I pulled this auburn jacket, little red top, just for some curb appeal.
No, I know what you're thinking, but can I say a color? Traffic light amber?
You think?
Red says something to O'Reilly's people, doesn't it?
Oh, come on, Tim. I mean, I'm not doing Glenn Beck.
Just think about it. And two words to both of you designers. Troop levels.
Meanwhile, the judges and I were reviewing last week's results. Howard Kaws of the Kaws Institute for Fashionable Policy did not like what Ethan was showing him.
He's superficial, he's glib, he's putting ruffles and flourishes on a tired old policy. I mean, nuanced. Show me the young people who are buying nuance.
I think he's got a good eye for details. I mean, dropping detained Taliban over North Korea. Nobody else ever showed me that.
I'm concerned about Cloetha.
Margaret Sloss, editor of Policy People magazine.
I think she thinks going down market wins the day. I wish. I think she needs to tailor her ideas a little bit more to Senate Foreign Relations. I mean, that's the show that counts.
She went to Pakistan last year. I don't know whether that helps her or hurts her.
5 hours to go, designers, and here's a special guest, Dr. Henry Kissinger. Each of you has 15 minutes to pick his brain. Good luck!
God, I remember watching Henry Kissinger on TV when I was in, like, grade school. There's so much I want to ask him, but I have to concentrate on my policy.
Ethan, whatever you present, you don't want it to be critiqued as another Vietnam. Take it from me.
Henry Kissinger was like somebody my mom talked about. I really wonder if he's got anything to say that's relevant to me.
Cloetha, Tim is right. Stay away from red.
Time's up, designers. Now remember, you're the policy. Be the policy. Next stop, makeup.
You know, I've thought about it. If I won, would I actually get to be on Meet the Press? But I can't let myself get too excited because, after all, it's still all about the Afghanis.
I've got to think I'm going into enemy territory to defend my policy. That's what makes me strong. Unfortunately, it's also what makes me weak, so we'll see.
Designers, this is it. Ethan, we couldn't get David Gregory to tape a greeting to you, but there's his picture on the big monitor. Your time starts now.
This is not a radical shift in Afghanistan policy. It's an evolution. Just as in post-surge Iraq, the troops withdraw to their bases, out of the people's daily experience. Big influx of civilian aid workers. And reliable metrics so we can measure our progress.
Cloetha, Bill O'Reilly has taped your intro.
Now, Cloetha, you think we should just cut and run, is that it? What say you?
Bill, you got to know when to hold 'em and when to fold 'em. It's our troop buildup in Afghanistan that's destabilizing Pakistan, and that's where our attention should be. A key part of staying strong is knowing we can't do everything everywhere. So we go in where the Pakistani army doesn't dare go. That's strength.
The judges are evaluating the presentations. The policy designers are awaiting their decision. And it all happens right here, next time. We're not dithering. It's just careful deliberation. And we're waiting for sweeps. Till then, So long from Project Afghanway.
Bye-bye.
But a fruit tree, so very unsung, it can never flourish till its stalk is in the ground. So men of fame can never find a way till time has flown far from their dying day. Forgotten while the year, remembered for a while, a much updated ruin from a much outdated style. Life is but a memory, happened long ago, theater full of sadness for a long forgotten show. Seems so easy just to let it go on by till you stop and wonder why you never wondered why. Safe in the womb of an everlasting life, you find the darkness can give the brightest light. Safe in your place deep in the earth, that's when I know what you really want. Forgotten while you're here, remembered for a while, much updated ruin from a much outdated style. Fame is but a fruit tree, so very unsound, it can never flourish till its stalk is in the ground. Some men of fame can never find a way till time has flown far from their dying day.
Ladies and gentlemen, on the subject of our friend Pakistan, Pakistan's Swat Valley is going to be reopened to tourists This according to a Pakistani army commander. Even though sporadic violence continues with 17 militants killed in the latest clashes. But wouldn't you like to go see that? Those clashes, man, on an iPhone camera? Clear as, the army has largely cleared the former Taliban bastion in the valley. The valley was once a prime tourist destination northwest of Islamabad. Military says more than 2,000 militants have been killed, although no independent verification of those numbers. Despite that, the commander of forces in SWAT said the valley would soon be ready for visitors. The operation has been a complete success. We plan to open the valley to local tourists within a month, says Major General Ashfaq Nadim. Now that's some fast work. That's some fast tourism development right there. The army is now turning its attention to South Waziristan on the Afghan border. I can't wait till we go there. Can't wait till they clean that up and I can visit a Hyatt. The Hyatt Waziristan. The Swat Valley has alpine scenery, ancient Buddhist ruins, and trout fishing. Okay. Young Western backpackers used to flock there for a rest on the overland trail from Europe to India. The valley was also home to Pakistan's only ski resort. But militants burned down the hotel at the resort last year. Nadim says he wants to get the message out that the valley is safe. We've asked the provincial government to arrange seminars on tourism and tell people the militancy is ended and tourists can come, he said. No, I'm just waiting for you to sign up. I'll be right after you, ladies and gentlemen. Just turn around. Look over your shoulder. I'll be there. And finally this week, federal investigators believe someone intentionally relocated radioactive uranium fuel pellets in violation of proper inventory procedures at a nuclear fuel facility in South Carolina. 25 pounds of pellets, low-enriched uranium, the kind that Iran has, are believed to have been recycled inside of the Westinghouse fuel plant and never taken outside the site. A Nuclear Regulatory Commission official said it's unlikely the material would be used in a dirty bomb. That's enough reassurance for you, isn't it? Unlikely? Clean, safe, cheap, too safe to meter. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system to Japan, around the world through the facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.415 megahertz, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archive whenever you want it, harryshearer.com, and also at kcrw.com. Available on your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free download to members at audible.com/LeShow. And available as a free podcast at kcrw.com. And it'd just be like it being even less likely than unlikely if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. A tip of the LeShow chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. And thanks as always to Pam Halstead. Email address of this broadcast and playlist of the music heard here on, just a couple of the incredible features at the always-evolving harryshearer.com. And I'll see you on Twitter at LeTwits. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. So long from London.